I just want to take a moment to welcome everybody to Colonial Connections, and this is the podcast that's sponsored by the School of Nursing Education and Human Studies at Robert Morris University, and I am Dr. Mark Myers. I'm the Dean of the school and your host today, and I want to welcome you back to Colonial Connections, and I want to give you a quick update. We're back on campus. We're back on, as our student life folks illustrated, the best sledding campus in the country. So if you haven't had a chance to get over to Moon Township and see some of the sledding going on, we invite you to do that. But more importantly, we're back on campus with our students, and we really like to focus on the connections that we're making with the community. And a terrific example of that is our Pierce Center. And so Amy Jackson from the center is here today. So Amy, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself.
Sure. So thank you for having me. I'm Amy Jackson, and I am the Dyslexia Outreach Support Specialist for the Bob and Joan Pierce Center for Structured Reading Teacher Training.
That is an amazing title and description of the center. And but when push comes to shove, what does the Pierce Center do?
Okay, so we, our primary focus is teaching kids to read, and specifically kids who struggle with reading. So our kids with dyslexia who have difficulty with reading. And what our purpose is to train teachers how to teach kids with dyslexia how to read. So that is the primary focus, but we offer all kinds of services to help out our community.
When people think about dyslexia, they normally think about what they've seen in the media and mm-hmm. people talking about examples and famous people that have overcome it.
Sure.
But when it's for a child, mm-hmm. what is that like for a child in school that's dealing with dyslexia?
Well, I think it's really challenging because, you know, as an elementary school student, let's just start with elementary school, kids are looking around and their peers are starting to learn to read. And if you have dyslexia, you're not quite there yet. And so for a kid with dyslexia, it's rather discouraging to be in school in general. Reading out loud is, you know, one of the most dreaded moments for kids in school who have dyslexia. So I think that for kids with dyslexia, they can be very bright kids, but reading and print in a print-heavy education system can be pretty challenging for those kids.
So do you find that the children that are suffering from dyslexia or mm-hmm. dealing with dyslexia, do they withdraw from trying to be involved with school because they're afraid of that?
Well, I think it depends on the kid. Because as you know, with any kind of learning difficulty, every child approaches it in a different way, or it affects kids in different ways depending on how they approach life. So I think, it depends on the child, and it also depends on when they learn that they have dyslexia. Because, you know, sometimes kids don't really learn that they have dyslexia till they're in fourth or fifth grade. And by then they've had a lot of years of failure. And so for some, it's actually very relieving to find out that they have dyslexia, because then they feel like it's not their fault. And then for others, I think that kids react differently, to their, diagnosis. But I think, for the most part, because dyslexia has nothing to do with intelligence, it really is just focused on that print and being able to read that print. Our kids with dyslexia often have wonderful comprehension and are extremely bright and can, compensate in so many ways that we don't discover that they're dyslexic for a really long time. So I think it just depends on the kid and how they, are with the way they approach life.
I think it's fascinating to think about the coping skills that they mm-hmm. might develop in kindergarten, first, second grade. You say they're not diagnosed until fourth grade perhaps, but they've had friends and mm-hmm. they can hear things and understand them, so they're faking it and
right.
doing that kind of thing, and they've come up with a means to cope. mm-hmm. so that they can hide that. And is it liberating for them when they find it out? You talk about some of them being happy?
Often it is because they discover, okay, so my brain functions in a different way and it needs a different way of learning to read. And that does not make me stupid, you know, because I think that for a long time, for many kids, they feel with dyslexia, they feel stupid because they're looking around at their peers who are getting it and they're not. However, you know, many of them are very good at math and they're very good at construction and building and seeing things in a different way. So I think that they know deep down that they have other strengths, but because they're surrounded by that print in school, they sometimes feel stupid. So
if I'm a parent and, mm-hmm. and I have my son or daughter that I'm worried about with this, are there certain things that they would notice that would be something, you know, because there's always a time when every kid doesn't like to go to school.
Sure.
You know, but is there something they should be on the lookout for that would be a key sign or indicator that it might be dyslexia?
Well, I think it depends on the age. So if you're in, let's say, preschool or early childhood, rhyming, not being able to really get rhyme and understand rhyme sometimes is an interesting way to look at that. And as they get older, they're not picking up letters. They're not picking up letter sounds. Perhaps, everybody always thinks it's that they reverse words, but it's not that necessarily. It's just that they know that B says B, but I don't know which direction the B goes in, so I have a 50-50 chance of getting that right. So the indicator is sort of maybe a hiding kind of thing or a lack of wanting to read. Again, it depends on the kid, but I think that, you know, by the time they're in that upper elementary age range, if they are encountering words and they're sort of guessing at them, that would be another indicator.
Do you think
there's a bunch of them?
In some ways, mm-hmm. I've heard some people describe it for themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm no expert, so that's why you're here. But for some people, it's almost described as a different language they have to learn. The verbal is different than the writing. So mm-hmm. it's almost a foreign language they're learning written versus what they do verbally. And that's what people need to understand. Is that in an apparent way?
In a sense, because, dyslexia is a difficulty with phonological processing. So it's the way that they process the sounds in words is challenging for them. So being able to break down words and maybe manipulate those sounds is a difficult thing for them. So, that's where the basis of it all is, and then attaching those sounds to the symbols that they see, it is like learning a foreign language because that they come to school with language, and we're not really pre-wired to learn to read. You know, reading is actually a pretty recent invention. So our brains are not actually wired to read. So when we sit down to learn to read, we actually have to be directly taught how to read. It's not something like we pick up like we do with language.
Mm-hmm. When you're working with an individual child, can you give us an example of some of the skills you would have to help them develop
Sure.
as they're learning how to do that?
Sure, absolutely. So when we work with kids with dyslexia, we often spend about an hour with them. And during that hour, we are going from speech to print and print to speech, back and forth and back and forth the whole time. So for example, we are maybe looking at letters and having them give us the sounds, but then we're going to flip it around and we're going to give them the sounds and they need to tell us what letters those sounds are, how you can spell those sounds. And so the kids learn that back and forth piece. Decoding, reading, and spelling are taught at the same time in conjunction with one another. So we spend quite a lot of time on those two processes right?
And does some of it depend, to your point from before, when they start the training? You know, is it something they're doing in preschool, kindergarten, first grade, versus a fourth grader? Is it different how they break it down, or does the tactics remain the same and they still have to build the foundation?
Well, it actually just depends on the child. So, the students that I typically work with are upper elementary, but I know we do have some kindergartners and first graders in there. And oftentimes we're working on the same thing. It depends on the child. So that's the beauty of what we do at the Peer Center. We use an approach called Orton-Gillingham that was developed in the 1920s. So it's a 100-year-old process. And what we do is we start where that child is, and we provide instruction based on what that child knows and what they don't know yet. And so, you know, sometimes I'll have a fifth grader who's working on what is perhaps taught generally in first grade. And then, you know, right after that, I'll have a fourth grader who's working on Latin roots, prefixes, and suffixes. So it just depends on the kid again.
And it sounds like even the diagnosis would be different for child to child, let alone the fix
right.
for that.
Absolutely. It's a spectrum of mm-hmm. Ability there for sure.
So when you're talking about the center, that's when you're working with it. What does the center do?
Okay, so the Peer Center provides tutoring, one-on-one tutoring for kids after school and in the summers, because, you know, we can't get them during school. So we do have reading specialists who've gone through the RMU Reading Specialist Program who have been hired to work there. And we provide that tutoring twice per week for each child. And then the other cool thing that we do at the Peer Center is people who are learning how to do this approach, we'd call it Orton-Gillingham or structured literacy, can do a practicum that they can do on campus here at the Peer Center, where they work with one-on-one, and it's a supervised practicum where they're learning how to do this with a child. And most of them come with great teaching background. So it's just about putting a new tool in their toolbox. So we do get to provide either low-cost or no-cost tutoring for these children, which is an incredible service for our community.
And this is across the whole region.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. So the training is also going on for both the children, mm-hmm. but also for the teachers that are getting another structured literacy credential, or also the students going through the RMU program?
Right. So there, we have both the reading specialist certificate. That's a 27-credit program. And during that reading specialist certificate, they take that structured literacy course that teaches that foundation for teaching kids with dyslexia. And then we have the structured literacy program that isn't like an add-on to that. It is another certificate that they can get. And then it actually leads to a national credential if they take a test and, you know, apply for that credential. So what's great about it is in the process of getting that new tool in their toolbox, they're getting to interact and work with kids in a clinical setting.
And you mentioned that the center and all of these teachers are working with the students both after school and in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it summer camps? How does that work in the summer when they're not in school? Or do they have them, is it a reading boot camp that they're here every day all summer? You know, that kind of a thing.
So we do not actually have a reading boot camp at the Peer Center. Our reading specialists typically still see those kids twice a week for an hour at a time. We are hosting a summer camp this summer from the Pittsburgh New Church School designed for students with dyslexia. They have a camp that they are bringing in that will be able to benefit some of our students here. So
that's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that you also train teachers. Do you also train the obviously the ones that are getting the credential,
mm-hmm.
but do you do training for other teachers so they can recognize and help identify students that they might refer for additional services?
Absolutely. So we can also provide what I would call outreach training. to any organization. It could be a nonprofit organization, or it can be a school district, who want more information about structured literacy and understanding how to implement this in their classrooms. So we can actually design it around their what they have on campus and provide that training that way. So it's designed for what they need.
So it really sounds like the center is impacting the RMU campus and our students, but they're also impacting all across the community in a bunch of different ways, from children to practitioners and all across the board.
Yes, absolutely. And we'd like to, the other thing we do is we make connections with some of the other dyslexia-focused organizations in Pittsburgh, like Pittsburgh New Church School, Provident Charter School. Those two schools mm-hmm. are designed for kids with dyslexia. Lachlan Children's Center in Swickley is one of our connections. Urban Impact on the north side, Duquesne Reading Clinic. You know, we just have connections all over.
What would be one aspect of the center and your functioning that would surprise people, that they wouldn't just recognize instantly something that you would be doing?
I have no idea.
Ooh, I stumped her. I like that.
You did stump me. Well, you know, honestly, I think that it might surprise people to hear that we're trying to help. We're really trying to help everybody in this. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising, but... you know, we're providing support, like Robert Morris is providing support to Duquesne right now. That one might be surprising,
right,
you know?
Right. Actually, I thought of that question when you mentioned Duquesne, yeah. and I wanted to get that out there to our RMU audience. That,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're partnering. So, it's a good
yes,
thing.
Yes, we do partner with them. We have a great relationship with them, and we are helping them with their structured literacy. So, because I think that the number one goal here is we have kids out there who are really struggling to read, and there are many, many, many of them. And the more of us who understand how to best support them and how to best teach them, the better. So we are just trying to reach out to everybody and build these connections.
I think that's a terrific example of everybody working towards the same goal and not
Absolutely.
Competing in terms of trying to say, oh, this is mine and this is yours.
Right.
And one thing I've noticed is that willingness to engage and to help people. That's been just so typical of the center since they've been here. But
yep.
it's also fair. And I have to ask, because it was Bob and Joan Pierce.
Yes.
Amazing couple.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about them and why this center is named for them and why this is a passion for them.
Well, they started, do you want the long story?
Or no, I don't want to embarrass them or anything like that. No.
Well, no, what I will say is that they started their journey into charitable giving to support dyslexia mm-hmm. in about 2014. They started with the Lachlan Children's Center in Swickley. Lachlan is known for their services that they provide outside of school, including tutoring. And the Pierces went to them and said, we'd like you to start a program for kids with dyslexia. So once they discovered that, you know, one-on-one tutoring is really what's most effective for kids with dyslexia, because it's structured, it's multisensory, it's sequential, and you can really get in there with that child and help them in a one-on-one setting. They said to me at one point, they said, well, how can we reach more kids? Because they really were passionate mm-hmm. about providing this one-on-one tutoring. And, you know, we looked at them and we said, you got to train the teachers. You know, so, and that's where how they ended up at Robert Morris. They, you know, worked with Robert Morris to develop a teacher training program for this particular approach, the structured literacy approach. So, I'll say that Dr. Carrie Ann Bernadowski was essential in that building of that program. She, when they said, we'd like you to incorporate this into the reading specialist program, she said, okay, let's do this. And she's been a gung-ho. She went on to apply for our accreditation through the International Dyslexia Association. I will say we are the only college in Pittsburgh that has that accreditation at this point. So that was really essential, and her hard work has certainly been able to provide that training for teachers, and more teachers are recognizing, you know, and using these, recognizing dyslexia and using these methods in their classrooms. I think I counted, I think I was looking at how many people we had trained in structured literacy. I think it was like 83 people already. So,
well, that's amazing.
Yeah, we're doing pretty well.
The thing that it really is a great indicator about Robert Morris and our school in general, but the Pierces and this center in particular, is it's focused on the child, and it's focusing on making a difference in the community one child at a time. Mm-hmm. And then the teachers needed to do that. We need more teachers in order to do that connected and build that from there, because people forget that it's always about the individual.
Right.
It would be so easy to teach everybody if everybody learned exactly the same way, and exactly you could just do the little script and it'd be done.
Right.
But it's not that way. And the thing that we all appreciate about the Pierce's support for this is it's from them down to everybody else. It's all about the impact.
It's all about the impact. It's all about how many kids can we reach? Let's reach more, you know, all the time. And I have to tell you, I really do feel like we're doing great things for teachers too. Because my background's in special education, and there's nothing worse than looking at a child who's struggling and not knowing how to help them. And this approach is a fantastic structure that teachers really do walk out of learning how to do this, and they know what to do. And they go, I finally know what to do when I see that happen. So I do think that, yes, we are helping those kids. And that is our bottom line, right? We want to help our kids who struggle with reading, because everybody has a right to learn to read. But we're also helping those teachers.
And the question I'd need to ask next is the elephant in the room, that everybody's going through a pandemic right now. So how has COVID impacted what you guys have been able to do?
So, very interesting question. So, you know, typically our tutoring is done one-on-one in person. And so when back in March, when everything sort of shut down, we rapidly moved to an online format. So where the kids are virtual, and we go through our entire lesson plan, as you will, virtually. And, you know, to keep them, being able to keep them going during the pandemic has been incredible. We got some advice from some other tutors in the city who had already been doing this virtually for a while. And we sort of took their ideas and helped our people who were doing the practicum and who were tutoring our kids at the Pierce Center, and we made a template for them and we got them going, and we've been doing some online. So now, you know, honestly, we have some kids who are still online because that's what their parents prefer. Mm-hmm. And then we have kids who are in person now. And I think that the challenging piece to the virtual setting is our instruction is very multisensory. And so I wouldn't say we're missing the kinesthetic piece. Mm-hmm. But it's challenging to fit that in. We've discovered that a dry erase board works wonders. but you know, so some of our people are virtual and some are in person, and the mask has been challenging because, you know, some sounds sound exactly the same behind a mask. And if you can't look at our lips to know that M and N, they sound exactly the same to kids behind a mask. So that's challenging too.
And as the people are listening to this, they realize we're behind masks and worrying about how we're pronouncing. Now I'm worrying about my M's and N's. That's good. Are these lessons you think you're going to apply in the future? Because two dots you've mentioned during our conversation has been always wanting to help more. Mm-hmm. And now the virtual, does that give you a means to impact a little Absolutely. More and get more people involved in the program?
Well, I think it does. I think that we have some students who cannot come after school. You know, they don't have the means to actually get to Robert Morris, let's say. And so we can still get, you know, we can still reach them at home online. So I think we actually have the ability to reach more kids in this way, for sure.
And that's great. And that lives the example that the Pierce are setting with establishing the center. Yeah. So if people wanted more information about the Pierce Center, where can we direct them so they can find out more information?
Well, I believe that our website is rmu.edu/Pierce Center. I think that's all you have to put in. Or you could just, very important. Pierce is spelled P-E-I-R-C-E. So. But if you write Pierce Center, Robert Morris, you'll find us if you Google us.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me today. This is such a fascinating example of the ripple effects that we can have across the community with our partnerships with the school, and that it's not just about the training of our folks or even our faculty. And you mentioned Carrie Ann is a great example, but it's about where we're training the kids and their parents and the teachers that are in Akron. And then it starts with the ripple. And personally, one of my hopes is that we get to the point soon. It'll take a few years, I think, before we have some alumni of the Pierce Center program coming to RMU as students themselves and perhaps becoming teachers in the future.
Absolutely. I totally see that happening. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to be a part of it all, because if I can help kids and teachers and parents, that's a great thing to be a part of.
That's something to be proud to be a part of. But thank you so much. And Joe, thank you so much for running behind the scenes here. And you've been listening to Colonial Connections, and we will see you next time.